We've really treated 336 in a non-comparative format, I guess, is the best way to say that. We feel very comfortable re-evaluating and comparing 335 because the definition is very standardized. However, the factors that may influence the unplanned readmission rate might be obvious and may not be. So we have treated 336 more as something for internal inquiry to be able to explore what might have contributed to that rate. And starting with the percentage of those unscheduled readmissions that are reviewed, that's the benchmark. Obviously, we could compare that rate, but then deeply diving into the factors that are influencing. So I think what I hear you saying, and something that we could definitely provide, is the percentage of unplanned readmissions that had a review completed. That would be something that could be comparable easily, but then the factors that contributed to the unplanned readmission as determined through the review process, I think would not be something that we would want to compare at this point until we get more experience with it.
Then the question I would ask work group members is this review, and I understand the importance of it, certainly from an internal quality improvement perspective, but is this the kind of performance measure you would want to use for comparative purposes, accountability, public reporting, and some other very external uses?
My thoughts would be that it would be somewhat similar to, do you use steroids in asthma? Yes, right? Yes, and we review these measures. We review our readmissions, and so I don't know if there's a lot of utility in saying how many of you hospitals out there, or how do you guys compare to each other about reviewing? Because I would assume that as somebody had said earlier, you're reviewing them. I mean, this is just sort of an obligation.
But David, does everyone do 100% review of every readmission?
I mean, we do.
Do we know if the country of everyone does 100% review?
Well, I can tell you that the answer to that is no, based upon what people have told us. Again, the documentation of this module is not required in VPS, so I can't say that 100%. But as we review data with every center, there are some centers that do not routinely incorporate this into their M&M or other QI activities.
I mean, that would give me some idea as to how aggressive their safety program is. If people get readmitted within 24 hours and Hospital A does 100% review and they really take it seriously, and Hospital B does only a 30% review.
I'll give you this. It would certainly be a lot more workable than as it reads right now.
Yeah, I guess maybe I read it as, in my simple mind, I read it as that percent. I didn't realize they were breaking it out into all those subcategories, which is very confusing.
So am I hearing that as presented to us right now, we have lots of concerns? And we've given feedback to the developers, and that perhaps if they want to, reformulate some of the responses in here to respond to these questions and concerns, perhaps that will clarify things for folks. And, we might think differently about it.
I agree with that statement.
Yeah. Okay. So Christine, you've heard the conversation.
Yes.
We'd be happy to work with you. Katie, Jessica, and I'd be happy to work with you if you would like to kind of redo this, because I think it's not really telling a story that's readily understood by audiences in terms of what the measure is, whether it's intended for accountability, public reporting, what a performance result looks like, and that sort of thing.
Okay.
But we'd be happy
sure.
to work with you to see if we can clarify things.
Okay. What is the time frame to do this?
We would need it back before the meeting in March.
And what date is the meeting in March?
21st, 22nd.
Okay.
That's
right. Absolutely doable.
Okay.
Thank you.
That would be helpful.
And thanks for the comments. When being in the weeds with this all the time, I can understand your perspective, and I appreciate the feedback. So I think we can clarify this sufficiently based on what you've said. Thanks.
All right. That's one of the benefits of having these preliminary reviews. Okay. We're moving through these measures. So the next one, 341, is PICU pain assessment on admission. And then very similar measure is 342, which is PICU periodic pain assessment. These Dr. Larson has been the lead on, and she's unable to be with us today. So I'll just kind of do what I've been doing. For the pain assessment on admission 341, this is the percentage of patients receiving a pain assessment. For the four folks who rated it, generally, it looks like the ratings are high across the board, and all four folks thought it met the importance criteria. Any comments from the workgroup members?
The only comment I have, and this doesn't necessarily pertain to this one, is when you go to validity, and everything under validity is NA, NA, NA.
Right.
But we don't have an NA box.
Right.
How do you, maybe we need an NA box, or maybe they can't put NA.
Right. Well, that I think was
noticed it on a couple. So I kind of put my hands up and said, I don't know what to do there.
Okay. I think that points out. Okay. I think that applies more to the scientific acceptability, but in terms of importance and opportunity for improvement, they're noticing, the results show the completion rate for the VPS participants of 83% to 100%. So I don't know how that breaks out into deciles, how many are in the 100% and how many are substantially below that. For the opportunity for improvement. But are there any other concerns on the importance criteria from the work group members? Okay.
No.
All right. In terms of scientific validity or scientific acceptability, Peter's concerns are noted that we really just don't have information on the validity, and I think that probably the technical group or the people you work with, Christine, sort of base it on the face validity, which is very common for performance measures, and sort of using that to respond to that question might be useful. Are there any other comments on the scientific acceptability from the work group members? I guess one thing I'd like to ask about is on page 5, under the specifications, you have under numerator time window, pain assessment on admission equals will be defined by each PICU policy statement in compliance with the Joint Commission expectations. I don't quite understand that because that doesn't seem very specific or very standardized.
That's actually true. What we started out with is after surveying the VPS participants, we realized that everybody's internal policy related to the collection of a baseline pain assessment was variable. There was no standardization. However, at a minimum, they needed to meet whatever the Joint Commission had required. So we weren't prescriptive there, and that was intentional. We wanted, number one, for centers to document that according to their own internal policies.
How do you collect the data, then?
It's simply a yes-no. Was the periodic pain assessment done for this patient, yes or no? Or, sorry, the baseline pain assessment at admission in accordance with your policy, yes or no?
Oh, because you write you say that the numerator details that you collect the ID, time, date and time of admission, documented pain assessment value and the pain scale and the date and time of the initial assessment. So those aren't
right.
data fields that you collect.
That's accurate as well. Sorry, I just meant for the reporting of the measure, the numerator is all the yeses, the denominator is all patients. But yes, in order, all of that is documented.
Is and I'll ask maybe David or some of the other clinicians who do this. Variations in pain scales that people might use?
Yeah, I had a question about that. I don't know the pain scale. I can't quote them to you, chapter and verse, but is that fairly standardized so that each individual center knows exactly which ones that they should be using?
We again, that's another area we don't prescribe, although every center in their internal policies, I believe this is dictated by the Joint Commission, must identify the validated scores and scales that they use. So do they use FACES? Do they use a Likert scale, you know, the 10 point scale? What are they using? And then obviously their assessments have to follow whatever their internal policy is. So that's the approach we've used.
And I guess yep. the other question I had was, on admission, what's the time frame for that?
Again, the admission assessment, so that is dictated by internal policy. In some organizations, it might be within the first 15 minutes or the first hour. Whatever is determined baseline or on admission is what is followed then to determine yes or no to that response.
I mean, the overall intent of the measure is to make sure they're doing the pain scale, but you don't want to be prescriptive in which pain scale to use because that would never go anywhere.
Correct.
And you really basically have to comply with Joint Commission standards, which is written in your policy.
Right.
So you're basically just going to report Hospital A is doing their pain assessment within 80%, you know, within their expected time.
Correct.
Right.
So it's really an assessment of performance against the internal policy, and those policies are...
But it's a requirement that everyone have a
right.
pain assessment.
Right.
Okay. And that's
they just don't
want to
be prescriptive of which one, because that would create a nightmare for everybody. But everyone uses, there's not probably one better than another, but every hospital has a personal feeling about which one they like.
Absolutely.
And some hospitals have more than one.
Right.
Yes.
And then the time frame, some scales might be supposed to be used in 15 minutes, or might be used in a couple of hours, so you can't really put a number there because it's based on internal policy, so as long as they're following it.
Okay, so essentially this measure is an assessment of whether the hospital follows their internal policies rather than an assessment of, but there's no evaluation of those policies.
Correct.
The thing I would ask the work group then is, do you feel that the measures are sufficiently specified for comparative accountability purposes?
Well, I think I'd love to see the variation across the country. If the number's 100% across the country, it's probably not a big, it's not a valuable measure, but now, there are a lot of places that don't follow their own internal policies, and that's what you'll see in the report, which I think is very valuable.
Christine, is that data that perhaps we could get from you?
The variability?
Ranges on performance for hospitals. Break it down just a little bit more.
I can see what I can do there.
Okay. All right. Any other comments on 341 is the initial pain assessment. The three of you that reviewed it said that, yes, it met your scientific acceptability. You rated it high to moderate on usability, high to moderate on feasibility, and all of you felt it met the criteria for endorsement. Any other thoughts or comments, issues, or concerns about this measure? Okay. We'll see if perhaps we can get a little bit more of the details on the data for the hospitals that do report to VPS. When we go to measure 342, this is a periodic pain assessment. I think the only thing that's different compared to the initial or on-admission pain assessment is that it's done periodically. But essentially, Christine, is it really minimally different from the other measure except for the time frame?
The ongoing nature and the assurance that pain is monitored throughout the ICU visit is the main distinction. And whether that is Joint Commission requires at minimum of every 6 hours, there are hospitals that I'm aware of that actually tighten that up to an every 4 hour window. So again, this is following their own internal policy with the awareness that their policy better at minimum meet the requirements of Joint Commission.
So is 6 hours Joint Commission standard?
Yes.
Okay, and if they do it every 4 hours, that's okay?
Sure, absolutely. So my point there was there are a couple of hospitals that have actually tightened the requirement to 4 hours. I don't know if that was intentional or if they weren't aware of that they were exceeding the Joint Commission requirement. But so in those instances, we instruct sites that they need to be in accordance with their own internal policy, because if the Joint Commission came in, for example, and they would look first at the standard, but then they would look at policy, and if sites weren't following their own policy, they would take issue with that as well. So that's the approach we've taken.
What do you guys see as the benefit of splitting these two things out?
I think from a nursing perspective, absolutely, and a care perspective, I think it's really important that not only was there a baseline assessment and a plan of care developed around the baseline assessment, but then ongoing, the evaluation of the effectiveness of that intervention needs to be monitored over time.
But wouldn't it hold it to a higher standard if you were combining them as one and saying that you wouldn't get full credit for either initial assessment or ongoing assessment? You just get credit for pain assessment, and pain assessment is defined as admission as well as ongoing assessment. Wouldn't that be a stronger measure?
I see that point. I think that if you focus on just the initial baseline admission assessment, that then allows you to determine whether or not the development of the plan of care really started with consideration of pain as one of the factors. And then the ongoing, I've already mentioned what I think the intent of that is, but certainly if it would be of benefit to merge these measures. I'm not sure if merging them, though, would get at both of those distinctions easily, but that's just my thought.
Any other thoughts from the committee members? In general, it looks like you've rated this measure to meet the criteria. Is this another one where perhaps a little bit more detailed current performance data may be helpful to the committee? How it's performing nationally? And we can see how we can work with Christine on that. Any other comments on either of the pain assessment measures? Okay. All right, then we move to our last measure. Which is the 343, which is the PICU standardized mortality ratio. And Dr. Stockwell, I think, was this yours to look at?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, great. Do you want to take a stab at it?
Yeah, I think that I didn't have major concerns with this. It's, again, using a method and a well-established risk of mortality assessment, and something that I know is used fairly. It's probably the main reason that you engage a company like VPS is to get this kind of a metric from them. And so this is, I think that it's fairly useful, and I didn't have major concerns as I recall.
Okay. Other folks on the committee, because again, this is an outcome measure, clearly an important outcome measure. I did note that they mentioned some focus group testing of families prior to publication of this data was felt to be important to families. So that, you know, speaks to usability. It is published, and I checked those websites and did see the current data from Wisconsin and Cincinnati. So it certainly is in use for public reporting by some hospitals. Feasibility sounds like it's totally dependent on use through VPS at this point. So no one else would have access to the PRISM risk model?
That's accurate.
Right now, yes. That's the current state.
Okay.
How has VPS, how has NQF treated that kind of a situation, just out of curiosity?
Well, I mean, what we generally require is that the information be publicly available, and it isn't exclusively available through a proprietary system, so that the information about the model is available. Now, what clearly happens in other circumstances is it's far easier. It's probably the very best way is to use the registry or the company that does it. But it is the information about how the model's put together, the risk factors, the coefficients, the intercepts, and all of that is supposed to be publicly available. And one of the things I want to talk to Christine about was when this measure was initially endorsed, that agreement was established. And so kind of hearing that it isn't available is news to me, and I want to pursue that further, but we can do that offline.
Okay.
Yeah, I know the developer of the PRISM, and it's never been publicly available, even before VPS got the rights to it.
Okay. I mean, I think that raises an issue because measures endorsed by NQF, there may be an entity that is the easiest, best way of doing it, but we aren't trying to promote measures that funnel folks in one direction, per se, so that typically, there is a requirement that the information to calculate the measures be transparent and available, and so we need to pursue this one further on that basis.
Can I ask a couple of questions?
Yeah, sure.
The first question, besides, I don't know the PRISM model that well. If somebody dies in the ICU, it's considered a death. If they go to the floor, is it still part of the model?
No.
Mm-hmm.
So if they go from the ward to the, if they go from the ICU to the floor, they're still in the hospital. It's not considered part of the model.
Correct.
Really?
That's
That's completely different than all the adult models. In all the adult acute care models, if you die in the unit, it counts. If you die on the floor, it counts.
Yeah. That is
that's
not how.
If you're from the ICU and you go to the floor, it counts. So, yeah, that's that's a little concerning. The second question is, have you considered doing an SMR 30 as opposed to just an SMR?
I'm sorry. Can
you
repeat
that? Have
you
considered doing an SMR 30, which is 30 days from admission, as opposed to doing an in-house death rate?
Currently, we haven't calculated that way, no. I'd have to look into that. I'm not real familiar with that.
Well, I mean, that's the way CMS publishes their model data, the way we do our data. I'm curious. It's more expensive because you have to look 30 days from admission, but it's a little more valuable to know what happens, because it's the same issue of gaming. If you move patients around in the hospital, you won't see where the death is, and then it'll look like it's a good hospital with a low death rate, when in fact you're just moving them to another location where you're not tracking it. The next question I had was, I guess it's not an issue yet for public reporting, but if you do publicly report, I mean, we do an SMR also, and we find the public has no clue what it is. And CMS does an RSMR, and that's something we're thinking of doing also. So just, it might be something to consider. It takes your SMR and converts it into a percentage instead of a decimal. And so you would get a risk-adjusted mortality of 8% or 2% or 5% as opposed to 1.32, which nobody understands.
Hmm.
I also found it interesting that you have SMRs of zero. Maybe that's I'm not a pediatrician. I'm more of an adult ICU person, but is that common?
No, that's a good point. I missed that. That's a good point.
Is it common that nobody – I mean, maybe you guys are better than we are, but –
No, I don't think so.
I find it pretty unlikely to have a zero death rate. That just seems – that would be very suspicious to me.
That speaks to the variability in the size of some of the pediatric intensive care units. In some of them, if a patient gets to a certain level, they transfer them out to a tertiary quaternary center. That happens.
I actually do support it. I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just trying to give you some suggestions with what at least the adult arena has done to make it more robust. But I would really question the fact that you have SMRs of zero, because I've not heard of a hospital that nobody dies. And
for a reporting time frame, obviously. Not ever.
The last question is it an electronic? Are you pulling this out of the electronic health record, or is this a manual system?
It's manual.
There's manual data collection.
Do you have a review of every hospital has to put the data, log the data into a system?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, that's the process.
Very arduous system.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we have a completely automated one. That's why I was curious. Okay. Those are my questions. So just really,
great.
I think it's a good measure. I think it's very important to be done. There just might be, and maybe in the future, some considerations to figure out where the deaths are occurring as part of the model, because all the adult models really look at death in the unit and on the floor as part of the model, and all the newer ones are looking at death 30 days from admission, so it doesn't matter if you're home, it tracks the death at 30 days, which becomes a lot more robust.
And how is that captured if the patient has left the hospital?
We go to the Social Security files. There are a bunch of files that we look at. Now, you know, it might be slightly different for pediatrics. I don't think it is, though. But, you know, Medicare does the same thing. We have to go to the death files and look them up. I mean, it's much more complicated to do, but it's a much better measure at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think all those are great points. I mean, I think that PRISM in and of itself is the risk adjustment side of it, right? So there's an assessment at 12 hours and 24 hours, and then it's done. And what all of the items that you're now discussing are really how do we figure out the mortality piece of it. And I'd love to see that continue to evolve in all those ways that you just mentioned. That'd be great.
And we can talk offline about it if you'd like, you know, show you some of the stuff that's being done if you're interested.
I would definitely be. Yes, thank you. Any other thoughts about these measures, or this measure, rather? Well, this group has done a very efficient job of getting through eight measures. I think we've had the opportunity to pull out some concerns, give that feedback to the developers. There are some areas where we're going to try and grab some more information to be either clarifying or more helpful to the committee as we go to the meeting. What we're going to do is summarize all of this, and we will be putting these on slide sets so that they're available at the meeting. We'll be able to give it to you ahead of time prior to the meeting so that you can see what the comments and the concerns were.
we will want any changes or clarifications re-entered into our system by the developers, so we will provide revised versions of these submission forms for you and let you know which ones have been revised. So are there any other questions or concerns from the work group in terms of what we're doing and what we're going to be doing next? Okay, any other questions or comments on these measures? All right then, Kelly, do we have anybody in the audience who'd like to ask a question or make a comment, or public comment before we close?
And at this time, for the public, if you would like to make a comment or have a question, it's star one. And we don't have any questions or comments at this time.
Thanks very much, Kelly. Okay, well, if there's nothing else from the work group, we've completed our agenda items and with a little time to spare, and I thank you all very much for doing this work. For those of you who haven't completed all of the ratings, we would be happy to have you enter them into the system, and we will incorporate them in with the rest of the data that we have for the entire work group. The more we have for the work group ratings going into the meeting, the better it is for the entire committee and the more helpful. But if anybody doesn't have any more questions or anything more to say, then I think we're finished with our business today, and I thank you all very much for joining us.
Thank you.